Excellent. Welcome, everyone, to our annual Desotel Consulting Interview Prep Workshop. It's become tradition now to hold this workshop yearly. I believe this is the third or fourth year now that we are doing this. It's very exciting for me to hold this event at the very beginning of the school year, right at the start of recruitment, where everyone's excited, nervous. There's a big buzz about, you know, finding jobs, especially for students graduating in December or next spring. We open this event up to students from different faculties, arts, engineering, and of course, management. Who's from management today? Okay, good number. Engineering? Okay, all on this side it seems, for most of you. Arts? Right. Any other faculty I've missed? Science? Of course, sorry about that. Very important. Great. Thank you very much. So today, as you can see, there is a camera crew. We are filming the event, recording it, because we understand that there is a wealth of information shared at this workshop, and so the link will be made available to McGill's students and staff for your viewing, to review again, and for those who couldn't make it. So we're thrilled that we were able to record this session. And this workshop is especially interesting because we invite representatives of four different firms to speak to you about their personal insights into how to prepare for an interview in the field of consulting. And they'll give a few tips on how, you know, they prepared their resume or what they look for in a resume, what it's like to be a junior analyst or junior consultant, as well as insights on, you know, what you really do on the job, because a lot of times you wonder, well, what is it really like? What do I really get to do? And we're very fortunate today to have four speakers. We have Patrick Raimondi from Accenture. We have François Bellemare, Oliver Wyman, Hélène Bourdeau, Deloitte, and Mia Morisset from Roland Berger. Because we're recording this session, I'm going to ask that you make sure that your phones are turned off. And if you need to leave the room, please be very discreet when opening and closing the door, because the door makes a lot of noise, as you all know. As well, I'm going to tell you about the format. So each speaker will present for 5 minutes on the case interview tips, particularly. Then the four guest speakers will stand at the front, and I will ask them four questions that I believe are questions you probably have and are interested in knowing about. And then I will open the floor to questions and answers. Okay, so we should end at about 11:15 or so. So we'll do our best to keep on time so that everyone gets as much information as possible. But before we begin, two very quick announcements. Is Anna here? Anna's there. Okay, so Anna and Michelle have two announcements. I'll ask both of you to please come up. They represent student groups, student clubs, and they're going to talk to you about them because there's a link to consulting. Michelle?
All right. Hi, everyone. My name is Michelle, and I'm one of the co-presidents for the McGill Management Consulting Association. So I'm sure most of you already know, but the MCA is the largest student lab organization that helps to educate and prepare McGill students for their careers in consulting. Some of our passion initiatives include we have workshops, we have networking events with consulting firms, we've had mock interviews, and also the case interview preparation system, and many more. And also, we have our own MCA casebook, and it includes everything that you need to know about consulting, the interview process, and also a whole bunch of cases that you can practice with. And for this year, we have something new and exciting. This is mostly for U2 or U1 students who are interested in applying for summer internships in the Toronto consulting offices. So we'll have a consulting Toronto trip, and this will take place in around late November. More information will be given out in early October. And so please don't forget to sign up as a member. We will be tabling right here. There's the information. During activities night, it's next Tuesday on September 9th from 4 to 8 p.m. in the Brofton lobby below. So don't forget to sign up. And if you have any questions or concerns, please don't hesitate to email us at support@consultingmcgill.com. Thank you.
Thanks, Michelle. And Anna, yes.
Hi, everyone. My name is Anna, and I represent McGill Not-for-Profit Consulting. So this program gives you the experience to sort of work in a live, full-on consulting engagement at a top-tier firm like McKinsey. And you also get the entrepreneurial side of finding a Montreal NGO and scoping out the project with your team of four students. Oh, sorry, this is Julie, my...
Hello, sorry. Really bad start, but...
Okay, so... Throughout this program, which is 2 semesters long, you will have access to 2 McKinsey consultants who will be the partners in your group, and teach you sort of the real frameworks in order to help you solve the business, come up with the business solutions. And they will be accessible to you on a weekly basis as well as through formal training workshops in their offices.
Okay, so this is really a great opportunity for everybody, even for people that are not from management, so you can learn from your peers as well. So you can learn real work, consulting skills, leadership skills, etc. And depending on the industry where, let's say, you would work, you can learn from industry leaders and also have a real impact on a real NGO in Montreal that you guys will choose, of course, with the supervisors. So this program has been established in 2008, and since then everybody has loved it, of course, otherwise you wouldn't be emigrating right now. And many of the alums have actually continued on to become full-time consultants within the firm that was mentoring them. So in this case, for example, McKinsey. And this is also a 3-credit course that is graded by Professor Omar Toulon.
Great. And if you're interested and want to find out more information, please join us for our information session. So coming up in 2 weeks on Thursday, September 18th at 5:30 p.m. It will be in the room 422, so just next door, or on the 19th at 4:30 p.m. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find more information on the McGill website if you type in McGill Not-for-Profit Consulting. If you haven't jotted the date or want to learn a little bit more, you can do that. Great. Wonderful. So without any further ado, let's start our workshop. So Patrick, if you please can come up. I have this if you would like that. Yes.
Good. Bonjour tout le monde. Good morning. Thank you very much for coming here this morning. My name is Patrick Romandi. I'm a senior manager at Accenture in the strategy group. Today I've come with Alice G as well, who's a consultant in the strategy practice as well in financial services. We came together to be able to provide to you more around the networking portion, a bit more of an experience view, if I can say it that way, of somebody who's been here for about 7 years, who manages consultant, who has been a consultant and grew into the firm. And Alice, who graduated 2 or 3 years ago from McGill, who joined us, who has been through the process a little bit more recently than me. So you'll be able to connect with both of us during the Q&A. But I'll do the initial presentation. So very quickly, I'll focus it on the case aspect, because I think that's where you're here. But very quickly, for those who don't know Accenture, it's a global consulting company. Quite big, around close to 300,000 employees in pretty much all of the different countries. $30 billion in revenue last year. And we're pretty much spread across different business sectors. So you see the different business sectors. And then within each of the business sectors, we have what we call transversal. So you have Accenture Digital, which is a group we recently launched. Launched from acquisition, which is now around close to 40,000 people, and it's the largest end-to-end digital company in the world, which 3 years ago was non-existent. So it just shows a little bit the scale that we can have. Accenture Strategy, which is both what Alice and I are in. The technology group, and then operations, which are mainly around outsourcing activities. So from a management consulting perspective, or the management development program, what you will see within your tenure as an analyst, you will want... The program is designed for you to work across different industries with a focus around the Accenture Digital and Accenture Strategy piece. Okay? Very quickly on dates, you will see that also during the info session, there's a formal info session on September 12th. So for those interested, please join us and you will have the opportunity to hear more around Accenture and what we do. And these are some of the key dates if you're interested in applying. So key deadlines for application, September 14th, and then relatively quickly after, 2 rounds of interviews, the 19th and the 25th. So you'll see, and I think that's fairly common to most consulting firm interview process. It happens once it starts, it happens fairly quickly. So in terms of the case portion, who's already familiar with case type interviews? Don't be shy. Okay, cool. So you should definitely spend time with the McGill Consulting Club because they will be able to provide you with a much broader stream of experience, case interviews, and what most of the consulting firms are looking for. My experience by having been through the process and now giving the interviews, there's a structured approach to it, right? So it's not something that everybody can do it, but you need to practice. So one of the first tips I will give you, you see the formal key things in here, but you need to practice. It's not something you'll be able to wing the day of the interview. There's a way to approach a case. There's a way to go about a case and to start going through the case to be able to provide your recommendation. So you need to really, really practice. At the end of the day, the case interview, for those who don't know, is a bit of a situation, or think about it as a mini consulting project, which with the interview with the interviewer for about 30 to 40 minutes, you will walk through a program or challenge that you would typically see in at a client, right? And most of the cases that you will see are given by the people that will give you the case are based on their experience. So they will be based on projects that they went through, right? So it's an opportunity as well to better understand the type of work that we do by the types of case that you will be presented to, but see it as a way, as a mini project in which in 30 minutes instead of, I don't know, 6 weeks or 3 months to go through a full project, to be able to really understand what's the problem you're trying to solve, to be able to provide recommendations as well, and to be impactful into your recommendations. So at a high level, that's the structure of the case. Key things from experience that I will tell you around cases where I would say that actually typically from the interviews that I've done, McGill students are generally well prepared for the different schools that we recruit. So typically you guys are well prepared. Key things that will make you stand out. The first thing is listening. Before going into, the risk is trying to go into the solution too quickly. Before you go into the solution, make sure you understand what's the situation that you're in, right? So listening skills are key. Not only listening skills when the interviewer will present to you what the problem statement is, but the interviewer is there to work with you. You have to see it as a colleague or as a partner, if you want, whatever, but as somebody who's going to work with you through the case, he will give you tips, right? He or she will give you tips. The interviewer is not trying to squeeze you in a corner for you not to be able to crack the case. That's really not the objective. Typically, because it's kind of a bit of a nerve-wracking situation, it's a stressful situation to have, you know, time checked to be able to solve a problem, but listen to the interviewer. He or she will give you tips throughout the case to make sure you go into the right direction and try to hint at certain things. So that would be the first thing. The second is, once you understand the problem, start structuring your approach, right? And the typical approach that you hear about is try to do like a value tree or decompose the problem into the multiple aspects that you will want to look into or your hypothesis that you will want to look into, to be able to find what really is the problem and how can you then address it, right? So decomposing the problem, showing a structure on how you're going to approach this case is very, very important. You may have it in your head, draw it down, present it to the interviewer. The interviewer is not really, he's going to be interested in the answer. There could be multiple good answers. There could be multiple wrong answers. The idea is not to get the right answer. It's really more to understand what is the process that you're going through to be able to make your recommendation. So we need to understand how you think. So just having it in your head is not going to be good enough. Put it on paper. Go through your thought process with the interviewer as well. So structure is going to be very key. Typically, what we see from a structure perspective, you guys learn frameworks at school, right? The Porter's model and all that type of stuff. Try to tailor the framework or the approach to the case as opposed to the other way around, where people will come in and say, oh, I need to use Porter's five horses. And independently of what the case is about, you're going to use Porter. That won't work, right? You can use multiple different frameworks if you want, but try to tailor it to what's really going to be relevant to the case. So that's another important factor. Communication would be the third one. Clear communication is key. As a role as a consultant, you're going to interact with clients pretty much on a daily basis at a managerial level and eventually at a C-suite level. So impactful communication is key. Think before you kind of talk as you go through the case. Make sure your thoughts are structured. Make sure that when you ask a question, you thought about it and how it's relevant to the case. There's a risk that you just want to go too quickly and you just start rambling on. Make sure your thought process is structured, that you take time to ask the questions, that you also take time to listen to what the answers are before going into the next set. So think through your questions. Think through your approach as well so that you're clear when you go through the process that you do it in a thoughtful manner. That would be another important tip that I can provide to you. And then the last thing, and I'll stop there to make sure that we have enough time on the discussion and the panel. But another important aspect, which seems small but is also important, is time management. Right? You're going to have 30 minutes to do this. There's several steps you're going to need to go through. At the end of the day, you want to be able to provide a recommendation. We often see the interviewer manage the time, which is fair. However, if we see that you have control of the time and you're able to, as you walk through the case, you're able to see, okay, I have 10 minutes left. I can go that way and explore it a little bit further. Or I only have 5 minutes. I know I'm going to have to make a recommendation, so I'm going to try to speed up and execute to be able to provide the recommendation in due time. So being able to manage time is going to be important. That means being able to provide a recommendation on time. That also means not rushing through the solution. If you're trying to find out what the answer to the case is in the next 5 minutes, most likely there's something that is not going well, right? So you need to manage it both ways. There's often a risk of trying to go to the solution too quickly. You have 30, 40 minutes, whatever. Make sure you're clear on what the duration of the case is. And then make sure your approach supports that time check. And it's the same case on projects that we do with clients as well. If you think about it, some of the key elements that we want to look for, structured communication, problem solving, some financial analysis as well, basic math, these are all key consultant skills that we will want to test in the case, because these are the key skills that we will have or you will need to be working on consulting engagements. All right? So these are the quick tips, if you want, that I can provide on the case. I'll be happy to answer more questions when we do the panel, and Alice as well, to provide more of her perspective as well. Thank you.
All right. And Hélène Bourdeau from Deloitte will be up next.
Thank you. I actually feel very technological with this. At the time I was studying at McGill, which was a long time ago, we didn't really have all of this. So it's good to see that there's a lot of people here today. It's great to see the interest in consulting. So as Julia mentioned, my name is Hélène Bourdeau. I'm from Moniteur Deloitte. Maybe just a few words on Deloitte. Deloitte is known basically as an accounting firm, one of the big four. But it's also a lot more than that. We do have different service lines, financial advisory services, tax, but we also have consulting. And that's why I'm here. And even within consulting, we have different umbrellas. So as you can see, Moniteur Deloitte falls under strategy and operations, but we also have supply chain, finance and performance management. We have technology groups and human capital groups as well. So depending on your interest and your competencies, there's probably a group that would interest you. So the case interview, while you, Patrick, what's your name? Sorry. Patrick gave actually a lot of good tips and a good idea of what a case interview would look like. Maybe I could add some more about the format. Sometimes you can be given a case in advance, You're given a lot of data, and you're given two or three questions. Then you're given maybe half an hour. You have to make sense of all the data and come up with recommendations and answer the questions that you were given beforehand. So that would be one format. You could also have some sort of incremental interview where you have a full discussion with the person, with the interviewer, and so you start. They start with some facts, and then you have to ask the right questions, and along the way, more information gets added, and then in the end, you should come up with a solution, recommendation, or anything like that. So that would be two typical formats, but there are other ways as well. So it can be written, it can be oral. Usually they last about 30 minutes to 60 minutes. On our side, I think it would tend to be more on the 60-minute side. They're usually one-on-one or one-on-two, two being the number of interviewers. So that's it, I think, for the case interview. Why do we do that? Because what we see when we get your resume is actually just a unidimensional view of who you are. So we know what you did, we know what you studied, but we don't really know how you react in stressful situations. So that's really important in that case, and that's why we do case interviews. So what are we looking for? We say Deloitte, but it's probably most consulting firms. So I think we could divide it into two broad categories of skills. So problem-solving skills on one side and people skills on the other. Can you hear me? I have a sour throat. Okay. So in terms of problem-solving skills, we were mentioning analytical skills. So yes, you know, you have to know how to do basic math, but it's not everything to be able to do a financial model. You need also some some qualitative aspect to it. We want to see if you're able to take the noise out of the data and take the data that's relevant to the problem at hand and to try to come up with a solution. We want to see if you're able to synthesize the data that you have and if you're able to tell a compelling story with that information that you have and if you're able with this information to answer the problem at hand and to come up with solutions and recommendations for the client. In terms of people skills, if you're a consultant, you're going to be working with people all the time. So it can be with a team that can change for every project. Also, it can be with the client and then the team that the client decided to put on the project. So it's important that you have good written oral skills and that you show professionalism as well, that you present well to the client. So maybe I will go quickly on this one because I think I've used my 5 minutes already. Preparation is very important. It's probably 80% of the whole recruiting process. And preparation starts at the time when you write your cover letter and your resume. And it's not just before the interview. You have to do your homework. So we say know the firm. So go on the internet, talk to people that work at the firm or that have similar similar jobs. So do your homework there. Know yourself. So even if the case interviews are going to be a big part of the recruiting process, you will be most likely be asked behavioral questions as well. So you have to make sure that you know you come up with examples of your past that can answer to particular situations. So you can be asked, tell me of a story where something like this happened. What did you do? Or you can be asked, talk to me about your greatest achievement, or maybe a bit more forward-looking. In let's say you have this situation, what would you be doing? So expect some part of the interview to be based on that. So prepare yourself. And okay, it says 50 to 100 questions. Maybe it's too much, but you know, try to cover all the aspects. Also, know your resume, know your story, know the path of how your experiences, your interests led in a nice way to you wanting to be a consultant. So try to find the reason and why the experience, your experience makes you a good consultant. And finally, know the job. So knowing that there's a knowing that there's a likely going to be a case interview, you need to practice. So there's a lot of websites, and as I can see, there's also mega groups that help prepare for this type of interviews, case studies, also do market sizing exercises, brain teasers. So do a lot so you feel comfortable. As Patrick was mentioning, structure is really, really important. So practice is going to help you through the interview process. What else could I say? Yes, maybe try to see, to just pick a number of industries and try to analyze them at a high level, just identify challenges and maybe trends, things like that. Just the fact that you have done the exercise for one or two industries will help you if you're asked this question in a case interview, even if you don't know the industry at hand. So that's pretty much it for the tips.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Francois Belmar from Oliver Wyman. Very excited to be here. I know the recruiting season is pretty stressful for you guys. Very exciting for us. We get to see new faces, get to see people with a lot of talent. And we really fuel from the energy that you guys bring up when you go like to this process. So great to see that all of you are here today. And happy to answer all your questions. So really what we're... I think we covered a number of themes in the previous two presentations, and I want to go back a little more to the broader process, because the case interview is one big thing. We also have what we call fit interviews. So we want to know, like, your personality. How do you fit with the company? That's also a very big aspect of the interview process. But do not underestimate the case interview. The case interview is the deal breaker. If you don't do well there, you will not go through. So it is important that you really prepare yourself and be ready to excel at the case interview. And then when you get to the fit interview, then it's more a question of like just be yourself and be able to fit well with the company. So in terms of what typically we're looking for, I think we covered most of these big things: problem solving, communication, creativity. This is really the core of the case interview. And I think if there's only like a couple points that you should write down, like as you're walking into the interview, is one, take your time. I mean, you've heard it like many times already, but we cannot emphasize this enough. People will jump in it way too quickly, and you need to be careful with that. So structure your analysis, structure your problem, and ask questions. You don't want to be, the interviewer doesn't want to corner you. They want to see you succeed into this case interview, really. And the best way to do this is as you're walking in, you break a little bit of the ice. You know, start the process with the interviewer. It's a conversation. It is not like a one-way discussion. It is truly a conversation between you and your interviewer. So don't be afraid to really start and asking questions and be able to kind of understand what are the tips, which way is the interviewer kind of leading you towards so that you can get to a solution there. The top three there, I think we talked about. All the other ones: leadership, teamwork, maturity, enthusiasm, integrity. Those are things that you need to keep in the back of your mind as you're presenting yourself. And that is both, well, that is for the cover letter, that is for any networking event that you're going to, it is for the fit interview. We remember you. We take notes when we go through these events. And you need to stand out. I think it's always a good way to approach this. We know that you're going through the process with multiple firms. There's differences. We all come from like a slightly different backgrounds, and we operate in slightly different industries, or at least like different type of projects. So it is important that you know who you're talking to when you get into those different events and the interview process, so that you can really tailor your skill sets, your experience, your stories with that background a little bit. I think in terms of the type of question or the type of cases, you guys will have to practice. practice will really help you guys get through this as best as possible. You will encounter a lot of the, I would say, typical cases that you see. So the format will be relatively the same. I mean, we did put down here a few examples. This is really just to give you an idea of how broad the question might be. So you're walking into a case where it's a one-liner, really. How many gas stations are there in the U.S.? I mean, I don't know. I can present this case right now, and I have no idea what the answer will be. We can just wait to have you walk through a number of assumptions, hypotheses, do the math, and we'll get to a number. So no one has a real answer in the back of the sheet and just say, well, you know what, you were 10% off, therefore you failed this case. Absolutely not. I mean, you're going into this really in a way that you are really like the thought process is the key there. So that's why that conversation with the interviewer is critical, so that you can align with a little bit what he's thinking and what the different tips are as well to crack the case. One item, when you see a question like this at the beginning, so we said, like, take your time, write down notes. Time management is critical, and you will get to a point where you have so many ideas that you would like to talk about, but no time to do so. So at least at the end of the case, when you get to wrap up, provide your recommendation, if you have no time to go into a lot of details, at least you can just bring up those bullet points and say, like, if I had more time, I would have been able to talk about this item, and that item as well. So that shows that you had, like, a broader understanding of the problem, that you were able to really think through it, be creative, and be able to do it. Then we can work on speed afterward. That is more like you cannot teach someone how to think, but you can always improve on their skills afterwards. So that's a little bit the approach when we go to the interview process. We want to know what are the raw skill sets that you guys have, especially from a thinking process, so that we can grow you into the role of the consultant afterwards. I think in terms of, I'll just go in terms of the interview process, because ours might be slightly different from other consulting firms, and I just want you guys to be a little prepared for that. So first rounds will be in Montreal, and it's actually very exciting for us because we are growing the Montreal office tremendously, like in the next couple of years. So we're looking into doubling, possibly tripling our office here in Montreal. So we are really looking for people who are born, raised, or at least are interested to stay in Montreal. Personally, I started in our Toronto office in financial services, moved back to Montreal into aviation practice now, and I can tell you it's a very exciting time to be in Montreal, and we're glad to be here at McGill actually to do that recruiting. So the first rounds will be in Montreal, one resume base, so that's what I was calling the fit interview earlier, and then the one case based interview, and again, this is the most important one of the two. And then final round, you will have one resume base, two case, and then one of them is a presentation case. So going into the communication skills, and that is valid also when you do a one-on-one case interview, if you can have the best thought process in the world, but if you're not able to communicate that to the interviewer, it's not going anywhere. So you need to be able to really structure that thought process, and that's why taking time at the beginning of the interview is critical, because under stress, your brain will go like a thousand different ways and you will like be all over the place. If you have like a good plan on paper, if you know where you're going to, then you're able to really communicate that to the interviewer. Presentation case is actually one where we emphasize this even more, where you prepare a case a little earlier and then you present it to a number of consultants that will evaluate you. So you are actually standing in front and presenting your thought process. It's not sitting at a desk one-on-one, it's a broader audience. And the reason for this is because as consultants, you're really like thrown into a fire right from day one. You need to be ready client-facing, you need to be able to present and take ownership of the work you're doing. So we want to know that from day one, are you ready to take on that job? Like this is like truly like a first test, really, that we're looking into. So. That's all I had for now. So. Thanks.
And now, Mia Morisset from Roland Berger will come to speak.
Okay. Hi, everyone. Before I jump into interview tips and everything, I'll briefly introduce myself. So my name is Mia Morisset. I graduated from McGill 1 year ago. So I've been working for Roland Berger for 1 year only. So, you know, I've been through the recruitment process 2 years ago. So, you know, if you have any more specific questions about, you know, as a student perspective, go ahead. So I graduated from a bachelor in finance in McGill. And I've been working on a couple of projects for Roland Berger. I've been working for market entry strategy in Brazil for a chemical company. And since January, I've actually been working for a pretty big project. I've been doing it's a broad project about organization, strategy, operations, so a bit of everything. And it's been going very well so far. And now I feel a bit home coming back to McGill to present to you a bit more about Roland Berger. For those of you who don't know Roland Berger, it's a European firm, and they opened the office in Montreal 2 years ago. So that's why it's still a bit on the startup side in Canada. So Roland Berger is a global management firm, 2,500 people, 50 offices in 35 countries. And the Canadian market is, we're booming in the Canadian market. I remember when I was first starting my interviews, the office was 5 people, and now we're 25, so in 2 years. So the office is growing really fast. So it's pretty exciting adventures working for Roland Berger. I'll start with the interviews, interview tips. So in terms of the interview process, it's a bit like the other firms. So basically, we have 3 rounds of interviews. The first 2 are with senior consultants and project managers, and then you do your final round with one of the partners of the office. It's fit and case interviews. I won't go too much into dates. I suggest that you come to our official info session next week on Thursday, September 11th. So I recommend you guys to come. So I'll jump right away into what we expect from you. I'll try to say different things that the other speakers haven't told. So of course we're looking for as a junior consultant for people with a business or engineering or even broader background. Any majors doesn't really matter. If you have a previous consulting or just a hands-on experience, you've actually done some practical things, like not only theoretical like you learn in school, but you've been to a field and you were able to construct something. And that also goes with the entrepreneurial spirit. Entrepreneurship is actually one of the core values of the firm. And Mr. Roland Berger is, he was an entrepreneur, a German person who built from scratch the firm. And so we like to have this kind of we look for people who have who develop some sort of initiatives. So if you have this sort of, you created a project, developed some initiatives, just make sure we know about it. That's for sure a good story to tell in an interview. So make sure we know it. For sure, we look for, this is a bit like the other firms, people with analytical thinking, strong in quants, structured thinking. It's an office in Montreal, so we look for bilingual people, and the thing that's good with Roland Berger, it's a European firm. We have a lot of opportunities to work in Europe or in Asia because the brand is also really strong in Asia. So if you're interested in traveling a lot, it's also a good place to work for. In terms of case studies, so we mentioned a bit of all those already, market sizing cases, business operations, more about strategy, brain teasers, random questioning. When I was doing my own interviews, it was what I had was basically business strategy cases, but they mix a bit of, there's a market sizing, and then there's a brain teasers within the case, and then there's a random question. So basically they tried to really try to understand every aspect of you, how you react to every type of situations. So for us, it's don't expect any type of cases. Just make sure you're ready for everything. I remember even for my fit interviews, I got some really random questioning. I remember at McGill, I was a TA in stats, and during my interviews, what's the standard deviation, the formula? I'm like, oh, right. So there were some, just make sure that you're prepared for everything. So I remember I also had like Spanish in my resume. So I had like 2 questions in Spanish. And I was like, whoa, I need to remember my Spanish skills. So, make sure you're ready for that. Okay, in terms of do's and don'ts, I'll try to say things that haven't already been mentioned. I think one of the most important thing is, you know, be yourself. Don't try to fit into a mold, or, you know, we want you to be somebody. Don't. Just be yourself. Stay yourself during your whole process. And otherwise it won't work out at the end. You know, everyone mentioned that listen carefully to the questions. Don't interrupt the interviewer because you think that's going to be the question. Don't do it. Just make sure you listen. Make sure you listen to every details. Sometimes if you think, you know, there is a detail that's coming back and forth, maybe that's a cue, you know. So make sure, be attentive to cues. That was really key for me. We mentioned, you know, take the necessary few seconds to, you know, to think about your approach. If ever you're stuck in a case, and, you know, that can happen, make sure you take a step back and make sure you go over the case again, you know. That's why also taking notes is really important, because if you're stuck, you're going to have your notes. They're going to be structured, and you're going to be remembering, you know, what you've done so far. And just thinking also out loud can help you to find some other way. And just discussing with the interviewer, you know, he doesn't want to block you. He wants to help you. So make sure you think aloud. Take a few steps back when you think, you know, you need it. And it will help you to find a way to find a solution. We often hear about, you know, be creative. But stay realistic. You know, sometimes people really try to be creative, but it needs. Just make sure you take a step back again, and, you know, think about business sense. Can it be realistic? Does it make sense? So make sure. Cause sometimes you're like too focused on your thing, and you don't take the step back to make sure it makes sense. So do that necessary step. So we mentioned about taking notes and thinking out loud. Trying to think about other tips. That was, you know, the main things for me. Yes, if, you know, you think you know the case, you're not sure, you think you know how to resolve it, don't use the approach. Just make sure you listen to the, sometimes, you know, they change a detail or something, so don't use the approach you think is the good one. Just make sure you adapt your structure to the problem that you have in front of you. And I think that's pretty much it for now. I'll let, you know, the rest for the questions at the end. Julia, I'll let you.
Thank you very much. Okay. So I will just close this and one moment. I'm going to ask our four panelists, and Alice as well, who's here with Patrick from Accenture, to please come up to the front. We'll try not to stand in front of the projector. And I'm going to ask our panelists a few questions, four. And afterward, I know you're all dying to ask questions, so we will certainly allow time for you to do so. Right, maybe here.
A lot of interesting work experience before, and I'm an economist by training, so when I was studying at McGill, so it was a profile that they were not too familiar with, and that was actually quite helpful in my case. And I think in terms of the cover letter, I had worked with consultants before, so I had a fairly good idea of what the work would be, and so I was able to express clearly what I was looking for, or why I would be a good candidate. And in terms of what we're looking for, a lot of people say creativity, and it's true. If you want, you need to stand out. But at the same time, sometimes we receive resumes or cover letters that are just too crazy. So just try to stand out. Don't be too long. We don't have so much time to read every cover letter. But highlight your achievements and why you would be good for the job.
Let's say just a couple quick things. So get the basic rights, right? So the basic rights is no spelling mistakes, yeah. Structured, very clear and synthesized in terms of your cover letter, and it's also clear at what your resume is in terms of what you've actually done, impacts and outcome. So that would be the basics. After that, I think a couple tips is, again, tailor your cover letter to the firm that you are going to apply, right? Very often, by reading cover letters, I could replace Accenture with Deloitte or with Roland Berger, and it would be the exact same thing, right? So it doesn't show any differentiation or any sign that you've done your research and you understand the business and what are some of the key differentiators that these companies are going to apply for. So look for that. Look show us a sign that you've done your research, you know the company that you want to apply and why you want to apply as well. And from a resume perspective, again, basics, good grades is one thing, but having had work experience doesn't matter. There's no expectation that you have 5 years of experience going out after the bachelor degree, but that you were able to work while you were studying or that you had some internships during summers will show sign of like multidisciplinary aspects to your resume and something that someone who's well-rounded. So whether it's sports, whether it's academics, whether it's literature, whatever, but what are some of the other points of interest besides school so that you show a well-rounded perspective of yourself?
Yeah, I think great. Just to add to Patrick's differentiation point, a tip there is with all the information sessions coming on, just listen to the presentations and see what each firm is highlighting, because that's probably one of the key things that they find that they differentiate themselves on. And so if you can tie your interest to it, that will help.
And don't forget that you need to sell yourself a little bit. So when you're writing your cover letter, make it about what you've done, not necessarily like the organization you're working with did. It's about yourself. It's about your role, what leadership like role you had in the organization, for example. So don't be afraid to sell yourself, but obviously don't oversell yourself either, because then it just, I mean, we pick it up very quickly.
Yeah, I think in my case, I remember again, like I did it 2 years ago, so I think what stood out for my resume was I mentioned about hands-on experience, and at McGill, you know, McGill offers a lot of opportunities like that. Anna mentioned McGill, non-for-profit consulting McGill, Michelle leading the management consulting club, which I did 2 years back. So I think that kind of helped my application. I worked a lot with Juliet. We developed some new initiatives to promote consulting in McGill. So I think they liked that in my resume. Also, had an internship which was really hands-on in Cameroon, working for the Clinton Foundation, and I basically had to be very autonomous, initiatives. And they kind of liked that, I think, in my resume. So make sure that you have your good stories for that. To tell in your cover letter, and so you're prepared for the when the fit interview comes. So I think that was the two aspects that made my resume stand out 2 years ago.
Thank you. What do you wish you would have known or done prior to recruitment?
Okay, well, I can talk because I'm into it. I think when I first started to prepare myself for the recruiting process, I did the usual resources, Case in Point, Victor Chang, or all those resources that are very easy to get access to. But I realized that maybe I realized a bit too late actually that what's really helpful is to actually practice with people. Look at yourself here. You're all surrounded with people interested in consulting. Get numbers, anything, but prepare yourself with people. It's something to practice on your own. And in your head, it looks good what you're thinking. But when you say out loud, sometimes you realize that, oh, yeah, I could have said that better, or I can structure that better. So I think practicing with people is one of the key thing, the key points from my learning experience for the recruitment process. And,
So for me, I did my recruitment in 2011. So for me, what was really important was understanding what the firm is about, but at the same time, equally as important, whether I thought I would be the fit for them. Because as you go through it, and as I've been working on various projects, I've realized how much time you spend with everyone at your firm and everyone on your project. And so I know we keep emphasizing fit into your tips and all that, but that is really, really important. So
get to know as many people as you can from the companies you're interested in, from the auctions of the various companies, and then make sure that you can have a conversation with them. It's not just about what the firm is doing, it's also about, do you feel like you're comfortable enough with everyone at the firm, that you feel like you'd be happy working there, you'd be comfortable contributing, and you feel like it's an environment that will help you grow. So that was really important for me.
And asking for feedback, so when you practice with your peers is one thing, but also as you go through the recruitment process, you will go through a number of interviews with different firms. And obviously the first one is probably the most challenging one, and you will grow and learn a lot more as you go through the process. So don't be afraid to ask for feedback to the interviewer, not necessarily immediately after the interview, but after the call back or things like that. Try to build on that relationship a little more so that you can build on your skills and be able to be better prepared for your next interview that's coming up.
Thank you. Third question, can you give us insights into your roles? A little bit about the day-to-day, maybe.
Sure. I can go through it to Pauline. So right now, I'm working in the U.S. in Washington, D.C. for a financial services client. We're working on analytics strategy and operating model. So what I'm doing typically in the week is Monday morning, fly to D.C. Really short flight, actually, an hour and a half in our lives. So fly to D.C. and then go to a client site. And then usually there is an internal team meetings where you're trying to figure out what's the game plan for this week, where we add in our recommendations. And then we're working with the chief data analytics officer, who's part of the C-suite directly. So I will generally be attending meetings and workshop with him every week. And in addition to working with his team members on a more frequent basis, just to figure out what our recommendation is and how we can make sure it's something that works for them and that we get everyone's buy-in. So that's generally what my week is like, and then flying back to Montreal on Thursdays. And then on Fridays, being in the office and either attending a community event or a social, which could include like having a coffee with Patrick because I had a question for him, meeting my career counselors. It could be helping with recruitment activities or helping with community events that we run with nonprofits. It's typically what it looks like.
I work in Quebec City, so I travel back and forth for the past couple of months. And yes, it's a lot of client meeting, analysis, and working with the client to make sure that our recommendations are tailored with their needs. And as well, when we come back on Thursday, on Friday, like I have a barbecue when I go back to the office later. So yeah, the week is pretty similar to that, and also a lot of recruitment. I think if at I'm a junior consultant level, what's great about it is your brain is always working and you're always being challenged from a different way, and that's something I really like. And I think that at my age, you take on a lot of responsibilities, and I think that's also something that I really like about especially in the startup office. So that's something else about a consultant.
I guess.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Usually we would do also the traveling, but sometimes we do stay in Montreal. And depending on if you have to go to the clients, so you'll be in a war room for 4 days, 5 days maybe, or you can stay in your office, depending on the nature of the work. So right now I also go to Quebec City, so we might meet on the train. But I go 2-3 days a week, and it's a one-on-one with the client. The group is broader, but we're all dispersed within Canada, so we don't really meet that often. But sometimes you would be asked to work in presence of your team.
I think one of the most exciting aspects of consulting is that every project is different and every week is different. You can prepare as much as you want as you walk into like Monday, but you know something will happen and things will change. So be flexible and be able to kind of adapt to all situations is something that's both exciting and challenging at the same time. But it keeps the interest level very high on every different projects. And consulting has a fairly high turnover rate, so let's be honest, it's a demanding job. So from day one, expectations are extremely high, but then you get to prove your value as well. So you get to participate, you're in front of the client, usually in the first few weeks, first few months, if you're ready. You are an active member of a team, so you're not the analyst in the back room that's not doing anything. you are really like one of the contributing team members from day one, and that's a big role, and I think it's a very rewarding role at the same time. So
maybe just a quick perspective. So from a consultant's perspective, I think at an entry-level position, whether it's analyst or consultant, you will be doing three main things, right? One is your daily project work, right? So project work, which will have a lot of client interactions, workshops, analysis as well, and internal team meetings as well. So typically spread around these different types of activities. I think on top of that, at least from an Accenture, but I think it's relatively standard to other firms as well, as well as your daily work or your project work, you will have an opportunity to be involved with the firm in other areas as well. So whether it's in thought leadership, so developing a point of view on something you're interested with, so internal or external publication, but thought leadership is something that typically push for. As well as community events, so whether it's helping communities to provide breakfast for kids, there's a lot you will see when you join, at least with Accenture, but again, similar, I believe, with other firms. There's a lot of initiatives within the offices to do community events like this, helping kids for breakfast at school, planting trees in Mont-Royal. So whatever you have an interest in, you will have an opportunity to be involved in as well, and things like recruitment as well. So expect to have an opportunity to be involved in other things as well than project work. And I would say the third thing will be training. There's a lot of emphasis on training as well, so we can talk a little bit more about that if you want. But Accenture spends around $1 billion in training a year for its employees. So there's a significant investment in training, and rightfully so, because we don't have machinery or equipment. The power of the firm is the individuals that are in it, right? So there's a lot of investment that are there on training, so you will be doing a lot of it.
Thank you. So last question before I open the floor. The first few weeks must be a little bit stressful. What can a new young analyst expect? Can you describe to us a little bit about how they're eased into the role? Because as you said, it's very exciting, very demanding as well. How can they help themselves fit in?
When I started so in last September. So we started with a few weeks in Germany for training. So basically we're 50 young consultants from all around the world that are all starting. And we spend the first 2 weeks, we learn a bit about the basic of presentation skills, Excel, but a lot of social events. So that is pretty fun. But it's really fun too. So you really learn the Roland Berger culture. It's a German firm originally. So basically they really, you learn what's the real culture of the firm. Because in Canada it's a bit different. We have the North American culture. So it was it's a really great experience. So 2 weeks of training and then... like François mentioned, when you start right away on a project, and this is the best way to learn, like hands-on. So this is how it went for me.
Yeah, I mean, for me it's similar. So when I was joined, I joined with another McGill analyst as well. So two of us, we went through the initial, I think it was 2 weeks of training for me. It was online training, and then within the first year I ended up going to St. Charles, so our... essentially worldwide training facility where all the analysts are there. So that was within my first year, not the first few weeks, but some people do go. And then after a bit of training, or at the same time, there were a few community events to introduce you to everyone in the Montreal office, or if you're going to Toronto, the Toronto office, we're introduced to the various people in the different industries, so you get a first understanding of what everyone's working on, so you're starting to know just exactly what people do on a day-to-day basis. And then I was on my first project where you're really just jumping in. So really there is just to reach out to everyone on your project to ask for some advice in the beginning to see what they typically do when they start a project so that you get a better understanding. But even then, I would say it's never quite what you expect, and it's really just about thinking on your feet the first few weeks. But at the same time, reaching out for help as much as possible. No one's judging you in the first few weeks. Everyone's expecting you to learn really quickly, but at the same time, they're also expecting you to reach out to them to understand what you should be doing.
There will be support, right? There's support that is there to help you navigate around the firm. So Initially, you will, even before you join, you will have a buddy, which we call a buddy, so somebody that you will be linked to that will help you with your kind of your onboarding into the firm, whether you have questions, even before you start within the first the previous year, to help you ramp up and get involved into the Accenture community or the practice. Once you join, you have what we call a career counselor. So that person is typically two levels above you. And really his sole role is to help you initially get staffed and be a coach in terms of your different career decisions, projects. If you're going through a difficult time, whatever, they can be there to help you and support. And then from a staffing perspective, we have what we call HR reps that manage the supply and demand of what projects do we need people for, and based on the skill sets that people have, how do we do the matching? So you don't need to go and just look for every opportunity. There's a structure around it that will help you make sure that there's the right role for based on your profile as well. And you will see that as you grow with the firm, Alice made an important point around the network of the individuals that you will be working with, but also the global network. And this network will become very, very powerful in terms of helping you in your career, helping you get staffed, and just building strong community links with these individuals as well.
And it's funny, you realize it's a really large company, but it's a really small world. So on the current project, my senior manager, for example, when she was an analyst years ago, she worked with someone who was her manager, but now I think it was 8, 9 years later, he's now the senior partner and she's the senior manager. And they've gone through several projects, but somehow made it back together. So the network is really, it's really important.
And you get also evaluated at the end of each project. So the key aspect there is feedback again. So you get to learn a little bit about your strengths, but also your development objectives. So if something is not going well, at least you have very regular checkpoints in order for you to grow and fix those. So because it's a really steep path to go through the ranks in consulting, it's really a good way for the firm to invest into your abilities and to be providing you the right level of feedback so that you can grow and develop those DOs, as we call them.
Thank you. Great. Now, to the students. Who has a question?
Hi. This is a question for Francois. At Oliver Wyman, you do something different with your interview process, which is the presentation interview. So how would we tailor our preparation to prepare for that?
I think the communication, the verbal communication there becomes critical, I would say, because you're standing in front of the room. So that's very different. At least I didn't go through that process. It's a little like I was just, I gave the interview, but I didn't have to go through it. It's a totally new thing. So I would say watching it, practicing it's a little bit like you do an oral presentation. You go in front of a crowd and you need to be presenting. And I think the level of comfort that you have from being able, public speaking, is probably going to help you out through this. So again, be prepared. Having notes, talking points is really important. So I'll give you quick tip. When we present slides, for example, usually tons of information. You have a lot of stuff that you can talk about, but people will tend to just get buried in the details or walk through the process instead of going to the findings. Having 2-3 main bullets, main items that you want to hit and really present, that is really the key to get your message across and be a good presenter. So you keep the interest level very high, you get your point across, people remember that, and then you move on to the next points. So practice, I think, is the bottom line there.
So this is generally for all of you. So how big of a role does financial analysis play on the job? And so specifically financial modeling, what kind of frameworks do you use, or does that vary about from project to project?
It really varies depending on the project, depending on the client. So.
Mm-hmm.
Same here.
I think the industry, financial, so I did both. I started in financial services about 3 years ago and then moved to more of our aviation practice about a year and a half ago. Totally two different types of clients. In financial services, typically you have a little more of that framework. I mean, you do a lot of regulatory work, so stress testing for banks, for example. Those are kind of models that I would say we have almost have off the shelf, and then you repeat an exercise that's a little standard across like from one client to the next. But aviation right now, strategy, for example, completely like different beast, I would say. And that's when you basically build things from scratch. So depending on level of interest, your background, I mean, you will see like definitely like different experience in terms of those like financial modeling or any modeling really that you're looking into. But again, every project will be different. So everything you think, oh, it's going to be easy, we did this like last time, no, it won't be.
This is also a general question. When you most of your companies work in a wide variety of industries, and I was wondering, like, as you start out, do you get to pick and choose that you have interest in these industries, or do you just sort of get to know about it as you go along and do work on more projects?
In our case, we've become a bit more integrated nationally, but when we started, we were more local. So then you would be kind of influenced by the industries that are strong in wherever you are. So in Quebec would be aviation, could be mining, could be things like that. In Toronto, it's very emphasized on financial services. So right now there's more movements, so you can show your preferences and be staffed where the projects interest you. But when you start, it's not expected for you to, at least at Deloitte, to have a to streamline your competencies. You're usually expected to gather kind of a more general background, and with time and with the experiences of different projects you've worked on, you'll develop some sort of competencies in terms of industries, but also in what types of projects you can do.
We have a slightly different model. We have a global staffing model, so your local office is really not an indication of where you'll be working. I never worked in Montreal, to be honest. Right now I'm in the U.S., but worked in Asia, worked in Central America as well, and in Europe. So basically, you have a way to voice your preference. So a little bit like the HR representative, I think that you have at Accenture, we have our staffing, our talent manager, as we call them, will very listen to you. So you can voice a preference, and then depending on supply and demand for projects, obviously, we will try to like put you on projects where you have a strong interest. But again, the network you're building within the firm will become very critical at that point, because you'll be meeting people through social events, you'll be talking to them, and then that's a way for you to say, well, I have a really strong interest in health and life sciences, for example. Whenever like there's a project coming up, well, they will remember you and they'll say, well, oh, we have this new person that could be a great fit for us, so why don't we like try that person on the project? So it's really about voicing a preference, but there's on the back end the supply and demand aspect that comes into play.
From an Accenture perspective, there's a structured program that all analysts will go through from a management consulting perspective, which is called the MCDPU, so Management Consulting Development Program, which will last the tenure of the analyst's role, which is typically between 2 or 3 years. And the program is structured in a way so that you start as a generalist, and throughout your tenure as an analyst, you will be doing projects in multiple industries. So if you look at the columns that I showed you earlier, so financial services, telecommunication, utilities, and so on, so the intent of the program is to kind of have an ability to explore different industries as well as different functions. So whether it's HR, supply chain, strategy, and so on. But the program is structured in a way so that at the very least every 6 months, you're able to do projects in a different industry or in a different functions. The intent is to expose you to different areas of the firm, for you to see and develop skills in different areas as well, and also to be able to experience what is a strategy project or what is an HR project. And then as you get promoted to the consultant level, then you will select
the path in which you're going to go, whether it's strategy, whether it's directly into an industry or a specific functional group. So the program is designed that way. So when you reach consultant, then you start specializing a little bit more if you want.
I think for us, the process is a bit it's a bit of a hybrid process because we really want to expand in the North American market. So basically, as a young, you know, as an entry level, you work mostly as general level, but mostly to expand the North American brand. And then afterwards, there are some programs for global staffing. And again, when you you gain some experience, then you specialize in one core competency. And this, there are more and more opportunities for global staffing. So it's you start with a more local, well, national market, I would say, and then you move for more like a global global opportunities.
This is a general question. So when you were going through the recruitment and like early consulting process yourselves, were there ever moments or like a moment that you can think of that you were wondering or like thinking, is consulting really for me? And if so, what was it that gave you the confidence to obviously continue to be successful and get to where you are now?
For me, I don't know if there was a moment specifically, but I remember I definitely found it hard to balance all the recruiting things that are coming out, interviews, resumes, whatever, and also your work. Your project, your schoolwork, your exams, whatever. But I remember the reason why I chose to keep pursuing consulting was because, one, I enjoy practicing case interviews, and I like talking through that process with the people that I was practicing with, and I found the problems interesting. And two, it's something I mentioned before, which is people. So as I went through the interview process, I met a lot of people from my country that I really, really liked, and I thought that was the kind of people that I could see myself working with on a day-to-day basis, and so that's why I thought it made sense for me. So it's a combination of two things. But yeah, there are definitely times where I was like, oh, this is so much stuff going on. I don't know if I can really do it, especially with consulting and everything at the time. So.
I came from the federal government, so you imagine 37.5 hours a week, and then I'm like, okay, is that going to be for me? But the idea is it's fairly the same. So you have you're kind of a third person analyzing what's going on, not under, but so I thought, well, yeah, I think I'm there. I should be doing this. But what really convinced me was the people I met. So I know it would be a good fit. They would be a good fit for me too, because you always have the feeling that maybe the consulting world is like all sharks and so sometimes it might happen, but it might not. And so you just feel comfortable with your team and the company you're working for.
Yeah, I really agree. It's cliche to say, but it's the fit. It's 100% the fit, because there are so many interviews. You miss classes, you just go interviews, and it's a really stressful period, but then afterwards, you continue for the people, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. I love practicing cases, I love the job, well, it really looked interesting for me, but it was the firm, so, mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
First of all, I would like to thank you, all the consultants, for bringing so much nice tips on how to fine-tune the preparation process for the interviews. And you mentioned several things that we should expect, like brain teasers, market sizing problems, all these things. But Helen mentioned that it would be also nice to take some industries that you are not familiar with and try to analyze it and come up, for example, with what challenges this industry has right now. Can you please give an example of what to expect in this, what would be a good answer, something like this.
Oh, you could have a question, something like, tell us about the biggest challenges in the pharmaceutical industry, that's it. And then, so your answers might be wrong, but then we want to look at your structure, and also if you're able to identify typical challenges as well, right?
So for example, I have no idea what pharmaceutical or
But don't let that stop you, because in the end, if you think logically about what is it, you take a step back and you think,
okay, how does it work? And then you'll be able to identify maybe some trends or something that you've seen in other industries. So even if the question, the answer is not 100% right, most of the time we want to measure what's your rationale, your reasoning, more than the exact answer. So doing this little exercise, if you're able to, you know, by going quickly through kind of the economic environment, that's my, I'm an economist, right? I like that. If you're able to identify like challenges that are present in many industries, then that will help you structure your answer.
I'll give you a couple of tips. I think trying to do detailed analysis on every single industry is not going to be realistic or a good use of your time, but read the news, right? Mm-hmm. Be aware of what's going on across maybe a little broader spans that you would typically look for. So if you're only concerned with what's happening in Montreal, then maybe broaden your scope a little bit. If typically from a business perspective you have a particular interest in aerospace, start looking a little bit broader into other industries. So just with news, stay abreast of what's going on in the world. I know that I've started reading The Economist when I joined McGill, and I found it was a good magazine to brush up on both the political aspect and the economic aspect, right? So you don't need to kind of really dig for it. It's all there. So just be aware of what's going on in your surrounding. That would be and this will help you during interview process for industries that you're not aware of. The other thing is try to relate it to your personal experience. Right, you may not know anything about financial services industries, but you have a bank account, right? You probably have a credit card, maybe a line of credit, maybe student loans. So try to relate to your personal experience. Same thing, telco industry. You have a mobile phone, right? So you can very quickly relate from personal experience into other industries that you don't initially think of and will know about. So this will also, I think, help you quite a lot. And it's just very practical.
And don't be afraid to voice that you don't know about something as well. So if at the beginning when the question is asked and there's something that you just don't know about, ask questions. I mean, you're better off to be asking questions than assuming something and going down the wrong path. And, I mean, funny story, for one of my interviews, I didn't know what a fire hydrant was in English. I just didn't know what it was. And I asked before like going into like the questions, like, are we really talking about like Bonfontaine? And they were like, yeah. So, I mean, you know, brace the ice sometimes and you just move forward with it. So you're better, way better off to be asking those questions.
Agreed. On that, I would simply add, ask questions, but don't be afraid to have an opinion as well, right? A few times when I would give interviews, I feel like the interviewee wants me to crack the case, right? Which it's not really. So asking, so be careful that you balance in terms of the questions you ask to kind of clarify what you're looking for, but be very clear that you're expected to kind of lead charge, and you have to drive this, right? The interviewer will be there to support you, but the interviewer is not the one who has to kind of crack the case or provide you with the answer. So be careful with that.
And it's okay to make assumptions, but then voice them out, because otherwise the other person will be, why did he go this way? Whereas there's a logic behind the reason you made this assumption. If you tell why you're going that path, you know, even if it's not the right path, we're still going to appreciate the fact that you had the right reasoning behind it.
And if it's really wrong, then the interviewer will tell you that it's really wrong.
Exactly.
And it's okay. As long as you realize that it's wrong and then you don't try to dig further, you go somewhere else, right?
One more here, then I'll go on the other side.
All right, so I guess two questions, if that's possible. Is that possible? Okay. All right. What, I guess, is the most unusual background or resume that you've encountered from someone you've actually hired at a firm?
That's actually very... I'm glad you asked that question because, I mean, right at the beginning, Drew, I think you asked like how many people were from engineering, were from management. And we are not looking for a specific profile. At least Oliver Wyman is not. We are looking for what you can provide as an individual. And we know there are stereotypes associated with different majors. And we try to go like over that. Like we are not stopping at that major. We want to know exactly what's your background, what are your strengths, and really what is like the basic like toolkit that you have. I would just say like don't fall into like there's like typical loophole. Engineering will be very detail oriented and go like really to the math because that's like a comfort level. Management might be a little more like too strategic. You know, finding that balance between the two. I think everyone has strengths and weaknesses. But your major should not stop you from applying at all.
I think I have a colleague who's who has like a major in psychology, like nothing to do with quants or you know typical business. And she's actually, you know, she has so like we go to see her like every time for certain types of problems. She has like a way of structuring things or thinking about points that we haven't thought about. Mm-hmm. So that's just an example that you know that was a person with psychology background.
I had a colleague who was from fine arts.
Oh, yeah.
And so she did beautiful slides, for sure, but she also knew how to tell a story. So, and you would not expect her to be a strategy consultant, but she was great.
It seems like one of the key aspects that consulting firms maybe emphasize on is out-of-box thinking and creativity. So how do you make sure that when you're on a project, you don't necessarily reinvent the wheel or you're kind of not going completely off-tangent?
So I think this is probably typical of all consulting companies, but we all have our inventory of assets and things that people have done in the past. Some are methodology, some are more tools. And the first step is to leverage that. So we have a knowledge management system, I suppose, where you can access a lot of this material, I'm sure most firms do. So you start with that, and two is, there are definitely people at the firm who've done this before, so reach out to them, whether through your own network or just researching on the company. So find those people, don't hesitate to set up calls with them. Everyone's extremely happy to give you 30 minutes, an hour, however many long. Meet as long as it's not like 3 days. You want to talk to them for. Find the assets and then talk to the right people and then start from that as your baseline, so I guess your research set. And then think about does this apply to your client? Because that's key. You can't just reuse something that's existing for everyone. That's not going to work. So it's really about tailoring. And then at that stage, it's a lot about working with the client to understand what they want. So it's a lot about listening to what they need. But at the same time, to be in mind that as a consultant, you need to provide a perspective to make sure that you're working together to find the right solution.
Yeah, one reason why a client comes to see you is actually they probably thought about it, you know, internally, and they haven't found the perfect solution that fits you. So if they come to see you, it's because they want another perspective. So make sure you keep that in mind. So for us, we work the same way. So, you know, we use a global network and a national network to really have our base competence, and then after that, we tailor the problem, but we make sure that we actually, you know, it's all about value added. So make sure you have the value added and that's going to be your creativity aspect if you want. They haven't found the solution on their own, so they're counting on you. So that's going to be the value added point.
So since an engineering student or a business student or a psychology student can have completely different backgrounds, would the initial training be different for them, or would it be the same training? And would their like advancement through the firm be the same? Could they, like a business and engineering student, go through the same path?
The training is really common to all the new hires, and really, the on-the-job training will really be where you're gaining the most experience. So the first couple of weeks when you start are really like just basic toolkits. So some people will say, well, I know Excel, I can do this very easily. But in other instances, like people were like, whoa, never opened that in my life. We just assume that you're starting from scratch, basically, and we build on that. So that's not the scary part of it, I would say. Like you go to it. The main part of the training is a mock case that we do. So basically for a week it's a simulation of what would be a typical case. And then we even bring like consultants in the room and say like the do's and don'ts with no management in the room, so like you can really ask like the stupid questions to those people as well. But it's really like it's a path that will be tailored to you from the moment you join your first project, and then after that, it's up to you to really take it up to the next level. I think so.
For us, it's a bit different. So I mentioned that, you know, when I started in Germany for the first few weeks. And yes, you have like that base general kind of training with everyone, and you have like, yes, basic Excel skills, PowerPoint skills. But then after that, you can choose actually what kind of training. You have like some sort of like optional training. So basically you choose, if you're from engineering background, maybe you want more to learn more about, you know, strategy or, you know, any type of not too technical engineering stuff that you've done in school. So basically, yes, you can choose the type of different trainings, and then after that, like François mentioned, when you start on project, then the training is going to be a lot more tailored to, you know, what was the project about.
Yeah, I mean, Accenture's very similar. So we have a course that our training that everyone will be doing as analysts. So that's the set, just the, regardless of what your background is, it's a core set of consulting skills that you need. And then after that, depending on your project, what industry you're in, what area you're in, there's specific training on that that may be required, may be mandatory. And then there's another set of however many, I don't even know how many there are because there's so many, where you choose based on your interest. So I think I took one on, let's say, supply chain because, one, it was a project we're jumping on, and two, because it's something I was interested in. And then my project after was more about the financial services industry in general because that's where I was.
Mix of mandatory
and optional training. We're going to have time for just a couple of questions.
I'll take one here.
This is a question for you, Francois. So earlier you mentioned Oliver Wyman's global staffing model, and you have mentioned yourself that you've traveled around the world with clients. So business culture is different wherever you go, from North America to somewhere in Asia. So how do you take into account cultural sensitivities or cultural backgrounds when you approach a project? Or how important is that aspect?
So usually on projects, one of the partners is a relationship partner on those. So it's someone who knows closely who the client is and can provide you like some insight on that cultural differences that that you're facing. Most of the projects I've done were in aviation, so fairly like close circle, I would say, in terms of clients. So people are used to be dealing with sort of a global global employees, I would say, like that culture is a little more global in that sense. But there is obviously tons of sensitivity there. There's always like the teams are relatively, can be very small, could be 2 or 3 people, but it could be up to 30 and 40 consultants as well. So we make sure that every project, and that's not just for a global project, we have a regular checkpoints, like work-life balance checkpoints that we have. And that is where you have a channel where the whole team is sitting together. First, like understanding like how everyone is doing, like are you like working like 80 hours a week or are you working 20? Like what is going on there? But also if there's any like questions or issues with specific clients at different levels within the company, those are like type of channels that you can voice those and get some feedback, for example. So it's a conversation. I think it's really like you need to be flexible, you need to be understanding. Part of the consultant's job is to really like understand their client. And in a different cultural environment, you just need to add maybe a little more of a broader understanding that you need to bring in. But not different from what you would be doing working in Texas versus working in Quebec, for example.
There was one last question, and then we'll need a bit of time for mingling.
This is an individual question for each of you. What do you think is one of the most challenging parts of your job, and how do you cope with that for each of you individually?
I can start. So I would say for me, just on my reality, having a young family, I have 2 young kids, work-life balance, right? And I think you'll hear that a lot from consulting firms. Because the work is demanding, François made allusion to it before, turnover is relatively high. So it's not a work experience for everybody. I think it's very rewarding in a lot of different respects, but it's not for everybody. So you need to know that. And the work-life balance, you also need to manage that very well. So you need to set, and so the way that I do this, because
you could be working quite a lot or all the time if you want, but there's not necessarily value in doing that, and the firm will not necessarily push you to do that, to go that way. So it's yourself that needs to strike these boundaries in saying, this is work time, but you know, twice a week I have, I don't know, volleyball lessons, or I'm in a chess club or whatever. And so you will make time for this. If you need to compensate sometimes, you will. But it's important for you to set your boundaries. For myself, I have the opportunity right now to be working in Montreal, and at least 3 days a week, I'm home at 6, right? And I have dinner with the family, and da, da, da. And if I need to go back to work, then when the kids are in bed, then I can go back to work for to complete what I need to do. But I set myself that it's important for me to do that, and I do it. And I voice it. It's important to voice it. It's easier to voice it maybe as you grow a little bit into the firm. But it's important to do so that you know where the boundaries are and you work within these boundaries. And everybody will respect that if they're planned, if they're structured, and you will work around it, right? So for me, that would be the key thing.
For me, I'd say just training straight out of school as an analyst and progressing, it was really just about not getting too distracted by all of the information that you have available to you, but at the same time, learning as fast as possible. So there's no way you're going to know everything. Not at all. And definitely not on your first project. And there are times where you're going to feel like you don't really know what you're doing, which is when you need to start training yourself and start learning as much as you can from everything that's available to you. But the challenge there is there's so much. So how do you choose? And who do you talk to? And which article do you read? And which 100-page deck do you read through versus the other one? So at that point, it's really about being really clear on what the problem you're trying to solve is, and then what's the information that's really relevant, then bouncing ideas off other people around you. And it's something that you may think is important and may not be, something that you may not have thought of, it's really important. So when you first go to a client, the client's expecting you to be very prepared. Not know everything, but be very prepared. So to get to that point, it's really about not being distracted, but at the same time, always be very prepared. So.
If I can add to that, I think one thing is you're being challenged. You're always being challenged, so that you need to be prepared for that. And as you work on different projects, and like you mentioned, you learn so many different things, and then you get used to a project, you know your stuff. And then you get staff on a completely other project, and you need to start over again. So that's the exciting part, but it's also the challenging part because you need to make sure that you know what you. You can defend yourself in front of the client when you present. You need to know. You need to be prepared. You need to know your stuff. So I think it's that balance between you're always learning something new, and that's exciting. But at the same time, it's you need to redo it over and over again. So you need to just make sure you're prepared for that.
And also sometimes you do a project that you've done pretty much the same before, or that's more into your competency. So you're in your comfort zone. So then you're happy, things go well, and you bring a lot of value. And then the project finishes, and then you go to something you have no clue about, and you can't help but feel a bit not incompetent. But you know you'll learn, you'll know you'll do better. But the first week sometimes can be hard, especially if you just finished a project where you just aced it. So sometimes don't be too hard on yourself when that happens. It's normal.
One aspect is that you can't control everything. You're dependent on the client for one thing. So it's funny how like a lot of strategy projects start in the summer, and in Montreal we only have like 12 weeks, so it's a bit of a bummer sometimes. But I think it's learning a little bit to understand what you have control over and what you don't, and setting boundaries, setting rules, setting expectations, so that you're able to keep a good work-life balance, enjoy yourself, and when you have commitments, then able to go through those. I mean, one example is that vacation. I mean, work-life balance is very important for us, and you're working long hours, but when you set, like, you're planning a vacation, like, the project will always make sure that you can go and that you will not be, as much as possible, they won't reach out to you while you're on vacation. So, I mean, that's one of the things where people understand exactly the situation you're in, but you need to let go on some aspects and really like embrace the other ones where you can. So it's an intense lifestyle, peak and valleys in terms of workload that you have no control over in most cases, but if you're flexible and you're willing to take that, that's I think it's very rewarding.
I'd like to thank everyone. Thank you so much. I'll ask you to remain seated for just one more minute, as I would really like to offer a little token of our appreciation to our panelists. So our recording session will now end, and now you can come and say hello and thank you to our guests. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Julia.